Nevertheless, despite all of these limitations, by the middle of the 16th century, the arquebus had replaced the crossbow as the essential missile weapon on all European battlefields. Indeed, ultimately, the arquebus would edge out every single kind of infantry weapon except the pike, producing this reduction to two kinds of weapons. As a result of this reduction, by the middle of the 16th century, the European battlefield had come to be dominated by massed ranks of pikemen who were then protected on the wings by units of arquebusiers. Over the long run, however, this pattern tended to shift, and the gunners themselves became steadily more important. In the Spanish Army of Flanders, whose records are really quite good, we know that during the 1570s, there were about two pikemen to every handgunner, but by about 1600 that had shifted so that they were almost at parity. By the early 17th century, in other words, the pikeman and the arquebusier had exchanged roles and they've exchanged importance. Rather than the pikeman being the primary force, guarded on the flanks by the gunners, the pikemen become the secondary force, themselves protecting the gunners while the gunners are reloading. Now, the desire to make maximum use of the possibilities of the firearm also led to two other tactical innovations in 16th century Europe. The first of these is something which is usually called the countermarch, and that appeared sometime in the 1580s and the 1590s. Historians like to argue on the precise date. It probably doesn't have a precise date, but we can safely say the end of the 16th century. The idea of the countermarch was that you would arrange the arquebusiers in a series of ranks, something between 6 to 10. The first rank would then fire all as one, and then retreat to the back of the formation, or countermarch to the rear, in order to reload. And then the second rank would fire, and then go back to the back, and so on and so forth. And you would be able to rotate the ranks one behind the other. The idea of the countermarch, it's fairly straightforward, was to maintain a fairly continuous barrage of fire, and thereby overcome the problem of the individual arquebus taking so long to reload. The second main innovation of the late 16th and early 17th centuries was drill. In other words, constant practice, so as to familiarize the troops with the countermarch and also with their firearms. What's actually interesting is that drill has a publishing history as well. In the year 1607, Jacob de Gein published an illustrated drill manual under the direction of John of Nassau, who was the brother of William of Orange. This drill manual, or drill manuals like them, were published all over Europe in the 17th century, and they have a fairly standard form. The idea was to break down all of the complicated movements which soldiers needed to learn in order to use their weapons, and then present them as a series of numbered illustrations along with the associated commands. It looked almost like a comic book. Of course, it didn't have a very comic purpose. In fact, it seems to me that we can think of drill as representing a reconceptualization of warfare almost akin to the idea of mass production. That is to say, you take a complex process, you break it down into the simplest possible steps, and you perfect the soldier in this case, or the worker's skill on that simple step, and then you maximize the production. Not cars like Henry Ford, but large leaden bullets, almost the size of a walnut, usually in the 16th century. Now, there were two main implications of these new infantry tactics. First of all, the combination of the pike and the arquebus was virtually invulnerable to an attack by other kinds of units. The new infantry formations, for example, could easily stand up to a cavalry charge. Horses are really not stupid. They will simply not charge into the business end of a forest of pikes. Human beings can be convinced to do this. A cavalry charge, moreover, could also be stopped by controlled volleys of arquebus fire. Furthermore, despite the impression that we often get from movies, the vaunted shock value of the cavalry charge was in practice virtually impossible to achieve. The faster horses would almost always outrun the slower ones, and the braver riders, or perhaps the more foolhardy riders, would tend to go to the front, and the less courageous or more cautious ones would hold back. And over a couple of hundred yards, the seemingly united front of a cavalry charge would tend to thin out and dissolve. The 16th century, therefore, saw a shift in the composition of armies away from cavalry, which during the Middle Ages had been, of course, socially more prestigious, although it's worth pointing out that it was also an awful lot more expensive, and armies tended to have ever more infantry during the 16th and the 17th centuries. Now, this isn't to say that cavalry became completely obsolete. Horsemen did have an awful lot of uses as well. They were crucial for scouting, they were crucial for foraging for supplies, for raiding, for quickly plundering peasant villages, which is a favorite pastime of early modern soldiers. Moreover, even on the battlefield itself, if an infantry formation wavered or began to pull back, sending in the cavalry at precisely the right moment could turn an organized retreat on the enemy's part into a complete rout. But nevertheless, if the infantry was well trained and determined, it could throw back a cavalry charge again and again and again.